funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, more fallout from the decision to end the county line ballot system for one party. What does the court ruling mean for the state's Republican candidates?
I went to 19 conventions, and they were open democratic processes, and no one complained about it during the entire time.
Plus, 7 aid workers from World Central Kitchen are killed in Gaza by an Israeli airstrike as pro-Palestinian protests continue to flare up at a Teaneck synagogue. Also, court is in session. Civil and matrimonial trials in Passaic County will resume immediately, signaling the state's judicial vacancy crisis is almost over.
Progress has been made. There's been 24 judges that have been confirmed this year. So it's really been a great start to getting the judicial vacancies down.
And in the wake of the Passaic County Sheriff's death by suicide, a first responder wellness week aims to improve mental health for police officers.
This program is based on the premise of reaching in, that sometimes asking to reach out doesn't work as well as reaching in.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Tuesday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The state saga over the use of the party line is far from over. County clerks and other interested groups have until midnight tonight to file paperwork if they want to appeal federal judge Zahid Karashi's decision to temporarily scrap the use of county organizational lines on ballots for this year's Democratic primary. Appellate judges could have a decision on whether to put a stay on Karashi's injunction by as early as tomorrow evening. Governor Murphy today made his first public comments on the ruling during an unrelated press event. He was quick to point out that party organizations do more than determine ballot positioning, but said the full impact on New Jersey's political landscape remains to be seen.
Party organizations are about a lot of things, not just ballot structure. It's first and foremost about recruiting great Democratic candidates who believe in the values of our party, getting them to take the big step to run and helping them get elected. It's about putting all of our energies into defeating the looming presence of Donald Trump.
Republicans were mostly quiet while Democrats and progressive groups waged their war against the party line. Judge Karashi clarified over the weekend his preliminary injunction doesn't affect GOP primary ballots. Republicans will use the county line ballot structure as usual. But Democratic county chairs aren't the only ones who use that line to their advantage. Now more questions are being raised about how the ruling will affect the GOP Senate primary race and other down ballot elections in June. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports.
The fiery court battle's not confined to Democrats anymore. After a federal judge struck down Jersey's controversial county line ballot as unconstitutional, he ruled the decision applied only to the Democrats' primary on June 4th. But Republican groups this week filed a flurry of their own legal briefs, and they don't all agree. One group wants no county line on GOP ballots in June.
We're looking for equality under the law of the original decision. If the original decision stays in effect for the Democrats, then it has to be in effect for us.
Michael Burns with America First Republicans of New Jersey, a far-right group whose candidates got locked out of that Plum County line spot on the GOP's primary ballot where Donald Trump tops the ticket.
Our party really needs to be leading on reform. Right now, the Democrats own the reform movement with regard to ballot position.
There is going to be a slew of people coming in on the Republican side, challenging this the same way it's been challenged on the Democratic side. So it'll be interesting to see how the Third Circuit handles it now that it's kind of moved on to them.
Both Democrats and Republicans are appealing the original ruling. New Jersey's Republican Chairs Association will defend the county line ballot system. The old guard won't go down without a fight, says analyst Chris Russell.
This has a a seismic impact on the political landscape in New Jersey. And I think that's why I see so many people coming forward and throwing their hats in the ring on both sides of this thing.
If you remove the line on the Republican side, then it's anybody's guess which way that Republican primary would go.
Monmouth poll director Patrick Murray says the line can boost a candidate's vote share by 10 points on election day, and with Trump's name atop the GOP line.
And that's going to be the biggest visual cue that that voters on the Republican side have, because as I said, they don't know any of the candidates who are running. I mean, their name recognition among Republicans was below 20%.
That would seem to favor Republican Curtis Bashaw, a Cape May hotelier who's running for U.S. Senate and won the GOP line from organizations in 14 counties. His opponents, though, object bitterly.
The people who put him on the line, okay, are exploiting the Trump name and the Trump brand to drag him to victory.
The facts are, is he has a long history of donating to Democrats and a long history of being an anti-Trumper, and that's not what the Republican voters are looking for.
Christine Serrano-Glassner is a zealous Trump supporter and U.S. Senate candidate who discounts the county line process as truly representational.
These are folks that are county committee members. They are not the voter. They are not the Republican primary voter.
The way she's run her race has been name-calling and firebombing in incendiary emails about how I view President Trump, all of which were mischaracterizations.
Bashaw says the county line is fair and that he backs Trump without offering an explicit endorsement.
I'm supporting President Trump this fall. I'm his running mate. We've been through a process. It feels like it would be very difficult to exclude Republicans from the line process at this late hour.
Bashaw says he's not afraid to run a campaign without the line and has the money to self-finance. Meanwhile, the lawsuits continue as the calendar ticks towards June. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
Tension and clashes continue in Teaneck over the war in Gaza, with a protest outside a synagogue Monday night where about 1,000 pro-Palestine and pro-Israel demonstrators faced off. This time, while a ceremony was taking place inside honoring Israeli victims of the October 7th attack by Hamas, pro-Israel supporters say they began a counter-protest to protect both the synagogue and the event. Both sides waved flags and chanted at each other. And while police did have to break up a few skirmishes, the hours-long demonstration was largely peaceful. Meanwhile, overnight in Gaza, more tragedy. 7 aid workers with the international charity World Central Kitchen were killed in an airstrike by the Israeli military. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today said the airstrike was unintentional and promised to investigate. But the CEO of the World Central Kitchen called it unforgivable, describing the strike on the convoy as a targeted attack by the IDF. World Central Kitchen is led by famous chef Jose Andres, and it's been prominently involved in relief efforts in Gaza, along with other conflict zones. The CEO says their work was coordinated with Israeli authorities, and the group was traveling in clearly marked vehicles. The news immediately drew condemnation from around the world, and the charity has since halted its aid in Gaza as the humanitarian crisis there worsens. Well, the state may finally be turning the page on the judicial vacancy crisis. As of Monday, all trials have resumed statewide after Chief Justice Stuart Rabner ended the suspension of civil and matrimonial trials in Passaic County that's been in place since July. A series of court moratoriums have been in place over the last few years due to a shortage of judges on the bench. Now, recent confirmations put the judicial vacancy level at its lowest since prior to the pandemic, down to 39 empty seats from the all-time record high of 78 in May of 2022. But the president of the New Jersey State Bar Association, Tim McGoffrin, says that doesn't mean the work is over. He joins me now. Tim, thanks so much for joining me. So does this latest announcement from the Chief Justice mean officially an end to the gridlock that we've been experiencing in our courts?
Well, I certainly think it means we're in the last stretches of this judicial crisis that's been going on for the last 3 years. Progress has been made. There's been 24 judges that have been confirmed this year. So it's really been a great start to getting the judicial vacancies down in the 20s, which is where Chief Justice Ravner believes the number is more manageable. Right now, I believe we're still at around 38 vacancies, but there are people in the pipeline now, and we're very hopeful that there'll be another package of judicial candidates that'll come through soon. But certainly for the people in Passaic that have now got a full complement or almost full complement of judges, having the ability to have civil and family trials resurfacing again, yeah, is certainly a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, what has it meant for these litigants, and Passaic obviously being the last to end the moratorium, but these are lives and familiar matters and personal, you know, issues that have been put on hold for quite some time.
Yeah, as a family lawyer, I'm certainly very sympathetic with that. I mean, the idea of having some type of a dysfunctional family situation or custodial situation, or just having the ability to move on with their lives and having that put on hold when you have some hard decisions that people aren't able to resolve on their own, is certainly daunting for those individuals. And people who have serious injuries from personal injury and accidents and have medical bills and have other things that need to be paid in their own life and expenses to get their life back in order, having that unjustifiably delayed was certainly difficult. But we're coming out of it.
It seemed like, though, Tim, that it really took groups like yours, the Bar Association, the Chief Justice, others, to apply the pressure on both the governor's office and the legislature to get this done. Are you concerned at all that they may take the foot off the gas to fill these remaining seats?
That's always a concern, because the reality is that this is something that it's continual. People retire all the time. There's 400 and some judges throughout the state, so people retire. It's something that everybody has to continually work out. We have to recruit and find individuals who are qualified to be Superior Court judges. The governor's office needs to work with the Senate to find people that are acceptable to everyone. And I think the Senate needs to be mindful of the fact that they have a certain obligation to move nominees in a timely fashion. So I think, you know, that message has been made clear. Certainly COVID didn't help the situation any, but everybody's moving out of it in the right direction. I'm confident that by the end of this year, beginning of next year, that we'll hopefully be below the level that the chief indicates was something that the courts can manage, which is 25 to 30 vacancies. But everybody's moving in the right direction.
Tim McGovern is the president of New Jersey State Bar Association. Tim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
They give their all to protect and serve the community, but a new program is looking to turn the tables and make sure first responders are getting the care and help they need, too. Recovery Centers of America at Raritan Bay launched a training initiative focused on suicide prevention and mental health that comes on the heels of First Responder Wellness Week and in the wake of the tragic death by suicide of Passaic County Sheriff Richard Burdnick. Ted Goldberg reports.
A new program is teaching people what to watch for if a law enforcement officer, first responder, or veteran is considering suicide.
This program is based on the premise of reaching in, that sometimes asking to reach out doesn't work as well as reaching in. So we teach individuals to be responsible for the person next to them, whether that's in a cubicle or in a police car, wherever it may be. The other focus is to stop blaming the job. Once you start to blame a job, you remove your role. You justify inaction.
Clinical psychologist Stephen Wachschel says in most years, more police officers die by suicide than die in the line of duty. This program at Recovery Centers of America at Raritan Bay comes a few months after Passaic County Sheriff Richard Burdnick died by suicide in a restaurant bathroom. Dr. Wachschel says officers have a higher risk of suicide because of what he calls the police officer's paradox.
That sharing part about coming home and talking about what they saw, they really don't do it. So that gets kept in. And then there's the isolation piece of it that comes with that. So they tend to be hypervigilant. And if they go out to eat, they're at a restaurant, they'll sit with their back to the wall and looking at the door and scanning constantly.
The way that the police world used to work is you kind of hold everything in, and there's other avenues that guys and girls used to take to try to have that kind of release to get over the stresses of our jobs. Now it's more we try to get everyone to express themselves and try to have a different avenue, a different approach.
Union County Officer Mark Resda says attending this training was important for him.
The days for our guys and girls that are in law enforcement are very stressful, especially in the way the world is right now, that we try to learn as much as we can to prevent as much as we can to give them the help that they need.
Doing things like this with the Conquer Suicide Awareness or other forums for mental health and suicide awareness and prevention is paramount to keeping us alive.
Conquer Suicide means connect, question, respond, and it's the name of this course. Marine veteran Brian Gillespie works here and is concerned with how many military members die by suicide.
I know for veterans, they say that the average is 22 a day, but I know for a fact that it's higher than 22. If we're not getting people like Dr. Steve involved in the mental health and the well-being for our first responders, we're not doing our job.
Amy Lippitt works with veterans at Hope in Her Eyes, a nonprofit specializing in equine therapy.
Recognizing more warning signs as far as first responders are concerned, people that are trained to keep it suppressed. So I do a lot with disabled American veterans. So being able to read their body language a little bit more.
For her, suicide hits close to home.
My daughter has been struggling with her mental wellness since she's 11 years old. She's now 22. Attempted suicide 2 times, once overdosing on her own prescribed antidepressants. So it's something that is I'm extremely passionate about.
Dr. Wachschel has taught his program throughout New Jersey. His next training is for World Trade Center responders coming up shortly. In South Amboy, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
Another key component to good public health, according to experts, are policies promoting both healthy and safe neighborhoods. Camden County leaders agreed to dedicate this year's National Public Health Week to educating the public about responsible gun ownership and normalizing the conversation around how safe storage saves lives. Melissa Rose Cooper reports.
We urge everyone to secure all your guns, to model responsible behaviors, to ask for the presence of unsecured weapons, recognize the role that guns is suicide, in suicide, and tell your peers to be smart.
Camden County Health Commissioner Virginia Bettridge stressing the importance of gun safety in honor of Public Health Week. The annual event recognizes organizations working to improve the health and well-being of residents. This year's theme, Protecting, Connecting, and Thriving, putting an emphasis on the importance of keeping children protected from guns.
This piece of equipment that actually looks like a bicycle chain can change the trajectory of what's happening in our county and in our nation.
The Board of Commissioners hosting this gun storage presentation along with Be Smart, a program dedicated to raising awareness of gun safety.
We all agree that we want our kids to grow up happy and healthy. We all agree that we have the right as adults to make responsible decisions as to how to protect our homes, our families, and our communities, and that includes whether or not to make the decision to own a firearm. And we should all agree that if we can prevent even one child death or injury, it is our responsibility to do so.
Dave Austin is the Be Smart lead for the South Jersey Moms Demand Action local group. He says it's especially important to make sure guns in the home are secured, as firearms are the leading cause of death for American children.
While school shootings and mass shootings make national headlines, most unintentional shootings involving children occur in their homes. In incidents of gunfire on school grounds, 76% of the shooters under the age of 18 obtained the guns they used from their home or from the homes of relatives or friends.
Under state law, all firearms must be unloaded and stored in a securely locked gun safe or other locked container, and all ammunition must be stored separately.
There are plenty of firearm owners who store their firearms securely, but even in those homes, there's often one firearm at least kept stored loaded, unlocked, sort of readily accessible, often in case of home invasion in the middle of the night.
Mike Anestis is with the Rutgers Gun Violence Research Institute. He says studies show firearm storage is the exception and not the norm.
And our recent study has found that one of the main sort of motivators for folks not to adopt secure storage is that they just don't actually believe that it's going to be particularly helpful to prevent suicide, to prevent accidental deaths, to prevent theft. There's just not a lot of buy-in within the firearm owning community that this is a useful tool. But we know from study after study that, yes, in fact, it can be extremely useful.
It's not about owning guns or things like that. We know it's the right for people to own guns, but we want to make sure that people are safe while using those guns at home. Children handling guns, children taking guns to school, guns that don't have locks. So we think that public health plays a very vital role in making sure that these guns are safe to be used by the people that are intended to be used.
And even though gun safety might be an uncomfortable conversation to have, advocates say having it could just mean saving someone's life. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
In our Spotlight on Business report tonight, big changes could be coming to the gaming industry. A package of bills recently proposed would tweak the state's booming online gaming market by putting in more safeguards for kids and chronic gamblers, and also raising tax rates, in some cases doubling them for online wagering. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas has the details.
What they do now is that they have, you know, online gaming, but just for points. And what that does, it conditions the brains of the children to get ready to gamble. And to me, that's irresponsible.
That's one of the changes casinos would have to make under a package of bills introduced by Senator John McKeon to address some of the gambling concerns that have arisen, especially since the legalization of online sports betting in 2018, like spikes in gambling addiction.
Since the onset of sportsbook, in 2018, our helpline calls have increased by 277%, with the largest percentage of helpline calls coming from those between the ages of 25 to 34. But even more concerning than that is the amount of young people, those between the ages of 18 to 24, the number of calls doubled to our helpline between 2018 and 2023.
With so many in crisis because of gambling addiction, some are putting themselves on the New Jersey Casino Self-Exclusion Program, which means casinos can't let them play even when they come in. McKeon's second bill would allow individuals to sue casinos who let them play even when they're on that list. Right now, casinos have immunity.
If you're a compulsive gambler and you put yourself on the do not fly list, basically, if a casino still allows you to gamble, then they could be held civilly accountable. There isn't an industry in this country, including even the gun industry, that's immune from any kind of civil liability.
Stockton University's Jane Bukinevich says these cases could be hard to prove and could tie up casinos in litigation.
People can gamble anonymously in the casinos in person using cash and without playing with a player's card, so it can be hard for operators to identify them. It would be hard to determine, was it intentional or was it just unintentional simply because of the difficulty in implementing that.
But the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey fully supports that bill.
We have some of our helpline representatives that are on self-exclusion continually receive marketing materials from casino operators. And there should be absolutely be a restriction for those that are on a self-exclusion list to be receiving marketing materials from a gambling company. There's no room for that.
What there is room for, according to McKeon, is New Jersey to increase its tax rate on casinos from around 14% to 30%.
Compared to Pennsylvania, which is 35%, New York, which is 49%, that's nowhere close. So they need to pay their fair share. I propose going to 30%, so still far under the neighboring states, but that would produce about $150 million. It would be nice to see that money go to New Jersey Transit.
In a statement, the Casino Association of New Jersey says it strongly opposes any proposed tax increase for online gaming, and Senator Vince Palestina says trying to balance NJ Transit's budget on the back of an already struggling city is a massive mistake.
We still have issues here with homelessness, mental health, addiction. You know, we still need to redevelop, reinvest in the city. And so now is absolutely not the time to be increasing taxes on these types of things.
Would you be in support of some of that money being allocated, earmarked for investment into Atlantic City?
Yes, if the money is going to be dedicated back to the city, whether it's through, you know, the Economic Development Authority or CRDA or some other mechanism where we actually see the investment being done in the city, different conversation. But to just increase taxes and have that money go to Trenton isn't going to make any sense.
The bills are still in draft form. One thing all involved agree on, a public awareness campaign about the risks of gambling addiction. I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
On Wall Street, the stock market is starting this second quarter in a sea of red. Investors appear to be wary of chances for an interest rate cut from the Fed anytime soon. Here's how the markets closed today. That's going to do it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.
Have some water.
Look at these kids. What do you see? I see myself. I became an ESL teacher to give my students what I wanted when I came to this country. The opportunity to learn, to dream, to achieve, a chance to belong and to be an American. My name is Julia Toriani Crompton, and I'm proud to be an NJEA member.